Yes, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Warm Down. Today's guest, he's all right, I guess. It's Laurie Whitwell from The Athletic. How you doing, pal?
I'm good, mate. How you doing?
Right, I have got a very, very juicy title, which I have completely lifted off one of your latest articles talking about Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba, the inside story. So what's going on, Loz?
Yeah, I mean, this was obviously a reaction to Mino Raiola's statement, or interview rather, to Tutto Sport that came out on Tuesday, the eve of United's Champions League game with RB Leipzig, the best possible timing. And we were just trying to figure out whether it had a real influence on Pogba's state of mind, and basically just trying to tell a story again from when he first was at United, when he left, when he came back, and just trying to figure out why it's not happened, you know, where any kind of responsibility lies and what the future holds, because clearly Raiola's statement was pretty inflammatory, not, you know, what United would have wanted. And so the piece tries to look into that a little bit. So yeah, we've spoken to quite a few people. We actually, Adam Craft and my colleague got an interview with Gail Mahi, who had Paul Pogba. He was the agent to Paul Pogba, sort of when he was younger, before Mino Raiola sort of got involved. And his opinion, his insight was really interesting. Touched on the fact that at one point Pogba, after meeting Sir Alex Ferguson at Carrington before he signed for United from Le Havre, said, you know, I could see myself being at Man United for my whole career, one club, and that's, you know, how you know, I can well imagine myself, you know, here winning trophies. Obviously that didn't quite happen, and also Gail Mahi gives a bit of insight on the relationship between Raiola and Pogba, and then we look at, you know, who could afford him, where could he go, what does this mean for United, you know, going forwards in terms of picking him. Clearly Solskjaer sprung a bit of a surprise by starting him, and I thought he did okay, you know, certainly in a more advanced role perhaps than he has been usually under Solskjaer. So I don't know, what did you think? But that's the piece anyway, that's kind of what we try and get into.
So yeah, there was a few things I picked up in there. Pogba mentioning being a one club man, I think, is something that everyone goes, what? I think that was quite interesting. That was a bit of a bit of a decent coup. So congrats on that one. The fallout with Jose Mourinho, obviously United's denial of the fact that they were close to selling him, is interesting. I think that comes on the back of, was it 2018? I think they were very close to selling him in 2018 as well, but the offer came from Barcelona, which was the equivalent of like a Twix and a handshake. And then obviously talking about what the crack is with the future with Pogba and Raiola. And as you said, where does this blame kind of lie? In terms of his performance at the weekend, I thought it was pretty ordinary. I think that they weren't getting the ball to the creative players. I thought all of the forwards were very, and I include Pogba in that as a forward player, really. I thought all of them were quite isolated in the game. I thought they struggled to get into the game, because United couldn't advance the ball up the pitch. We held all of the possession that we had basically in our back four. And that's never going to be a good time for the likes of Pogba or Bruno or Mason or Rashford. So I don't think you could say any of them had a great game, but I don't think you could pin the blame for the lack of a good game on any of the players either. I think they all needed a bit more time on the ball. The thing that annoys me the most about it is the potential there for Pogba and Bruno to form two out of three of probably one of the best midfields in Europe. And if you could find the right third wheel to go along with them, United would be an absolute force. But it just seems like Paul Pogba just wants to be, despite, you know, at one point saying he wanted to be a one club player, which is mental. It just feels like as soon as he's not in Manchester, as soon as he gets on international duty, as soon as any opportunity arises for him to take the piss out of the club, he takes it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, clearly, I mean, I think that's what came through in the piece, though, that he has really, you know, wanted to leave since 2018, since the breakdown of his relationship with Jose Mourinho, and the fact that perhaps the club wasn't in the place he thought it was going to be, the team wasn't in the place that he thought he was going to be entering into. And listen, that's up to him as well. He needs to take responsibility for driving the team forwards. And you know, if you want to leave, you know, then do something about it. Obviously, the pandemic has affected matters, and that's what we sort of touched on a little bit. You know, we had some sources say to us that, yeah, he was actually quite close to leaving in the summer. United have denied, as you say. But it does add, there was clearly something going on, and it does add to the idea that, you know, his heart isn't in it. And that's obviously what Raiola communicated. So I think I and Solskjaer probably in that situation would rather go, okay, right, well, we'll, you know, sort out an exit for you and we'll bring in somebody who actually does want to be at the club, who, you know, can dovetail nicely with the other midfielders we've got. And I agree with you. Listen, it sounds fantastic, doesn't it? Pogba and Bruno. And I was speaking to people when after the lockdown sort of ended, or at least when matches started again, and you had Bruno in the team, you had Pogba back from injury. Can these two guys play together? And I think probably, well, listen, against lower opposition, where you're going to have much of the ball, I think that's a shout. I think that would be a really interesting dynamic. But against teams where, you know, you need a bit more, you know, combativeness in midfield, is that a word? You need more sort of defensive rigour or sort of the trust to do the job, you know, as outlined by a manager. I think there's too much sort of individual flair from both of them. You wouldn't necessarily trust them both to go out and perform a task for you. You know, they might go and unlock a defence, but sort of to balance off each other. So I think that's why really, you know, it wouldn't work as a partnership. And maybe I'm being, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm being closed off to the prospect of it. And you are right. And it's, as Gary Neville says, you've got two fantastic midfielders there, get a third and you've got a cracking midfield going on. But I don't know, I look at it and think that ship has sailed for Pogba at United. And, you know, it's probably better to have a midfield with players that want to be at the club and then can balance sort of better than him and Bruno can.
So there's 18 months left on his deal, expires in summer 2022. What do you think United are going to do? Do you think they would move him on this January if the right club came along with the right cash?
Quite possibly. I think January is going to be a really difficult month for everybody. But I don't see it happening in January. I think next summer, I think Raul is sort of laying the groundwork there for, you know, creating enough of a, you know, disharmony around the situation so that United perhaps get a bit tired of him and go, right, we'll let you go, you know, for whatever. But the clubs with the money, the clubs that he would want to go to or that would have the prestige don't actually have the money at the moment. So Real Madrid, we touch on the fact that, you know, they have to get rid of players. They have to, you know, lower the wage bill. They're not getting credit extended to them from the banks as they used to before the pandemic. There's also a little suspicion, perhaps, does Florentino Perez want to deal with Raiola? He's not signed a Raiola client for 4 years. So there's some sources have suggested to us that that might be a slight issue. Barcelona, again, you know, they've kept Lionel Messi, so they've actually had to, you know, cut staff. And basically all their, you know, players were up for sale in the summer, pretty much. So they look really difficult.
Bar and also possibly including Messi.
Well, yeah, I suppose it depends what happens with Messi in the summer. Maybe, listen, if he goes, then, you know, all bets are off, aren't they? They've got a bit more money, a bit more space.
A bit. He's on about £1.5 million a week, isn't he?
Yeah, it's crazy. But, I mean, that's the situation with Juventus. So Juventus are the likeliest option. That's what quite a few people said to us, that would make sense. You know, Raiola gave his interview to Tutti Sport. He mentioned Turin himself. Juventus is said to be attractive to Pogba. When you speak to people that know him quite well. And Juventus, you know, the only problem there is that you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, as you say, you know, like Messi, on 31 million euros a year, you know, a staggering amount of money. And how do you then fit a guy of Paul Pogba's earnings into that equation? Swap deals have obviously been mentioned.
Aaron Ramsey's on crazy cash there as well.
Yeah, that's it. Free Juventus sort of cornered the market, didn't they, for free transfers. So Rabiot, I think, is on a decent wedge as well because he was a free transfer. So, you know, they did do that really well. So they're not paying a transfer fee, but obviously they are paying higher wages than they would have done in normal circumstances. So, you know, that just means the annual costs are higher. You know, and when a pandemic hits, you know, you're in a bit of difficulty, aren't you?
So it does seem like clearly he doesn't want to be here. But if the options are limited to Juventus, maybe.
Yeah.
Is there a possibility that we see him sign a new deal with United?
Well, this is what I thought could happen when Bruno came in the building and, you know, Pogba was said to be, you know, really enthused at the prospect of playing with him. But I don't know. I just think it's, I think when you've got Raiola coming out saying stuff like this repeatedly, you know, it's not the first time, is it? And Paul Pogba himself, you know, when you say, as you mentioned, when he's on international duty, talking about Real Madrid as a dream, and you know, it creates an atmosphere where you think, you know, why would United want to offer him a new deal? I know it's to protect his value potentially, but really, if you look at it in a sober light, they'd want to build a team you know, with players that, that generally want to be here. So I don't know. The last I heard was that talks have very much been shelved. I think I wrote in November about that, and Raul has come out since and said, you know, we won't be signing a new contract, which, you know, you can look at it, as you say, one way and think, is it a negotiating tactic? But I think it genuinely is the case that, you know, they're looking to get out, and, you know, next summer offers the last chance where United could get, you know, sort of actual return on him, you know, transfer fee or a swap deal perhaps.
It'd be absolutely wild to see him sign a new deal. Because, yeah, like, okay, now what?
That's it. Would you celebrate that? I don't know.
No, I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't celebrate it. I mean, there's loads of caveats to wanting to see Paul Pogba back. You're going to go, listen, you're going to have to tell Raiola to shut up or sack him. You're going to have to tell your brother to shut up. I mean, you can't really sack a brother, but, like, all of these people are coming out on your behalf. And for all the people that are like, well, he doesn't control what his agent says. No, he literally does. Like, he literally will be, Raiola will be putting out things that Paul wants him to. Raiola's not made the money he's made by being reckless with what his clients want him to say. He gets paid because he does exactly what his clients want him to say. And he's pretty bullish with it sometimes, which might be a little bit, you know, OTT for some tastes, but Raiola wouldn't be who he is without the full permission of the players to be who he is. So anything that he's coming out and saying on that talks about Pogba, Pogba was well aware of that before it went out. So I think if he signed a new deal at United, I don't see how you could possibly do so with Raiola as your client or as your agent. And I also don't know how I feel about, if United were to dip into the market for Haaland, would it mean dancing with Raiola again? I don't know. If it's almost like you kind of know that this is bad for you, but you can't stop doing it.
It's difficult when he's got very good players, and Haaland obviously is the one that Solskjaer would want. It's crazy, really, given he managed him and, you know, has recommended him to United previously, and you know, United have subsequently tried to sign him, and that he's not. I think, I wonder if that episode did really damage the relationship, you know, between United and Raiola. You know, it certainly, Raiola came out and said some really strong stuff afterwards, and I wonder if that has, you know, been the division. I mean, I totally take your point on Pogba knowing, Pogba's knowledge, or you know, Raiola speaking out of turn. He definitely had these kind of conversations with Pogba numerous times, and I'm sure he knew an interview was coming out. There's some doubt about whether Pogba knew the exact content of what Raiola would say and the timing of it. That's sort of one thing that's been put to me, that actually, you know, he didn't know for sure that it was going to come out then and what have you. But I think the fact that he then left it, you know, a few days until after the derby to say anything himself on social media kind of says, okay, he, as you've suspected, he broadly agrees with it, and it's not, you know, too much of an inconvenience for him that it came out, you know, the day before a game.
Looking for the ultimate in stocking stuffers this holiday season? Then look no further, because our sponsors, Manscaped, have got you covered. They've got the tools to help you win this year's stocking stuffer or white elephant competition. Manscaped is the only brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene products. And, great news, they are available across Europe, Canada, and Australia. Now, not only that, males and females can both enjoy these, but they are all about the balls. So, as it says there, your balls will thank you. They've sent me the Lawnmower 3.0. I have got Crop Reviver. I have got the Crop Preserver. Reviver is a ball toner, which is a spray-on ball toner, which you can use on your hair, apparently. We have also got the Crop Mop, which are ball wipes, which, you know, you never know when you're going to need a little bit of the old around the old. So we've got a bit of them. We've got foot duster, which is foot deodorant. We've got a weed whacker, which is a nose hair trimmer. We've got it all. And if you want it all as well, then check it out. You can get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with the warmdown20 code. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with the code warmdown20. Whether this is for your partner, for your dad, for your brother, for your friend, get them something that they'll actually use this Christmas time. And it's almost sure to get a laugh. Yeah, and I think, let's be honest, if you're a journalist, then you probably know a couple. That might have flown over your head. Laurie can't see my camera, so he's probably missed me grinning at him as I've said it.
Right. I did see it, don't worry.
If you're a journalist and Raiola rings you, you're answering that call.
Oh, yeah.
That's a guy that you pick up to because you're like, what carnage is this? So you're the Juventus-based outlet in Tuttosport, and Raiola rings you and he goes, I've got some shit to say about Pogba. You'd be like, I'm fucking listening, brother. So, like, the timing, this wasn't something that accidentally came out. This is definitely Raiola going, put this out now.
Yeah, quite probably, yeah. The only thing to just add into that is that he did the interview because they have the Golden Boy Awards. I think it was something, so they were always going to do some kind of interview, and Raiola client has won it 4 times out of the last 10 years or something like that. So there was a hook to hang an interview on, you know. So he did also discuss Haaland within it, you know, what he mentioned, Solskjaer's comparison, you know, with Lukaku, which I don't think, I'm struggling to remember exactly when he might have said that, but Raiola said he's not like Lukaku, he's like Zlatan, you know, that kind of attitude, that kind of charisma and persona.
Charisma.
Well, yeah, he's a bit of an odd character, isn't he? But there is a link there between Lukaku and Raiola as well. You know, he used to be Lukaku's agent and then it went a bit sour, I think, after the Chelsea. The fact that Lukaku didn't go to Chelsea. So, but just on broader terms, yeah, it was an interview that was kind of set up to mark this award. But as you say, it's to be yet decided or to found out anyway, at least at Old Trafford, whether Raiola then said, right, put it out today, or Tutu Sport said, we've got this interview, we're just going to be a bit mischievous, we're going to put it out. And you know, the communication there isn't quite clear, but either way, yeah, it was a shocking timing, wasn't it, on the eve of such an important match.
Yeah, and I think the timing of it is minging. And I think... putting it out the way he did before a game, I can't envisage a time when it wasn't planned. You know, I think some things can leak out by accident, but if you're called up to ring to talk about someone winning an award, I'm pretty sure in your mind is just big Haaland up. Haaland's won this award, blah, blah, blah. I don't need to start fires with United, Juventus and Pogba while I'm talking about one of my clients winning an award. It doesn't feel like there was an open net there to just shoot at. It feels like that was a one more thing I want to tell you. This is on my mind. So, and I can imagine if Pogba knew he wasn't in the team or things was going wrong at the time that he was talking to him before he got on the plane, I think those timings kind of...
Yeah.
You know, I just get on the plane. All right. Are you in the team? No. Oh, Norwegian guys are knobhead. You can just see the way it kind of goes off, can't you, between an agent and a player. On the blame game side of things then, what do you think is the reason for Pogba not being the success we all hoped he would be when he signed in 2016?
I think he has to look at himself. You know, I think he could have done better in games. I think he could have, you know, his availability hasn't been fantastic, certainly not last season. I know he's had injuries, but you know, you sort of wonder, could he have given more of himself to United? You know, so certainly I think first and foremost he has the responsibility as the player. You know, it's up to him to change the kind of thoughts around him. But certainly, you know, if you've got the figure of Jose Mourinho there, we've seen it time and again, and we've seen it at Tottenham. You know, there was a sort of butting of personalities there, wasn't there? And you know, it just disintegrated. So if you're a player and you're kind of at war with your manager, then you're not going to fulfil, you know, your potential. Are you? You're not going to be at the best you can be. The style of play certainly is. You know, I think Pogba, you know, he showed it at Juventus, didn't he? 2 midfielders next to him. He had freedom. You know, for France, he has quite a lot of freedom to go and do his stuff, and that probably shows off his best light. Whereas Jose is a very pragmatic manager, prescriptive. Wants his players to perform very specific tasks, and that seems to run counter to how Pogba likes to play. That being said, when Ollie came in, you know, he did give him that freedom and he played really well, and then I suppose it was up to him to sustain it. But I think by that point he wanted to leave, so it, you know, again became difficult, and you know, the bids weren't there.
But he's not actually played a sustained period of time under Solskjaer either. He seems to have, you know, he got injured towards the end of that first initial, let's call it the interim run. He got injured very quickly at the start of the following season. He's been injured coming out of lockdown. He's been injured up until a couple of weeks ago. He hasn't really had the opportunity to play in an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer team. And that's something that you think Ole could probably have won an extra couple of games or two, having someone with the talent of Paul Pogba and fit and available.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so much frustration last season when he wasn't available. And you saw he came on against Watford, didn't he? And you know, I mean, that was a dreadful game. But he came on and you know, produced sort of three or four absolutely top-class passes, created chances. And you just wonder, you know, away last season to Bournemouth or Newcastle, you know, absolutely dire games. He certainly would have, you know, improved United's side. But I think now Solskjaer feels to me like he's a squad player because, you know, he's been on the bench for three Premier League games when he's been fit. Likewise, a couple of Champions League games. I think he'll use him. He knows that he's got, you know, top quality, that he can, you know, do things that other players can't do. But I think he probably also feels that he can't necessarily rely on him to produce that kind of quality. So he'll use him in moments. I don't think we'll see a big run of Pogba playing for United in, you know, in a set position as we did at the end of last season, for example. I think that was very much with a specific objective in mind: get to the Champions League, qualify for, you know, for the top four. And that was, you know, we saw good moment again. It was sort of, you know, when something clear and objective is there for Pogba to win, like the World Cup, you know, perhaps like the Europa League, like, you know, well, I know it's not a trophy, is it? I know as much as Arsene Wenger wanted us to believe it, you know, qualification for the Champions League, it doesn't get you any silverware, but that was a clear objective to achieve, and he ended up doing so. So, yeah, whereas this season it's a bit different, isn't it? There's no, the lack of fans again, I think also does, you know, make it difficult perhaps to G yourself up totally for certain games, but I suppose that's a different point.
Mate. Yeah. I mean, I know you've been managing to get into the ground for the games. What's your thoughts on how games are? I still think games are 10% less intense on the field than they would be with fans being there.
I think so. Scott McTominay did the only sort of bad tackle foul, I suppose, from a United perspective against City when he took out, was it Rodri by the touchline?
Fantastic tackle.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's it. So, you know, if that's in front of a full Old Trafford, you can imagine, right by the fans, you can imagine it being a much more, you know, febrile atmosphere, and that then encourages the players perhaps to do that kind of stuff. Whether that's for a good or not, I don't know, but the performance. But yeah, it's certainly, you know, the kind of impetus, the kind of urging on from a home crowd when it's 0-0 and, you know, isn't there, is it? So, and also think that that's when you get these freak results though as well, when there's a, you know, when it goes two or three, you know, there's not the the shame of having a live audience there to sort of stop it from getting worse, or, you know,
shame.
Kind of encourage, yeah, exactly. The Game of Thrones, you know, pointing and walking down the corridor of angry people. Yeah, so I do think it has affected things more this season. But last season it was different because people could see the end in sight. They thought it was going to be this one moment of no fans. We can get through it. We need to complete the season. Now we're obviously realising it's going to be a long time before we get full houses back. And that just, I think, is difficult perhaps in certain moments on the pitch when, you know, you're kind of having a little bit of a lull and you're in an empty stadium. I think it's difficult, isn't it, mentality to really be the absolute best you can and block out the fact you've got no fans.
Yeah, and on the most disrespected manager in the country, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, we win our game in hand, we're 2 points off top. We got Spurs and Tottenham playing each other pretty soon.
Spurs and Tottenham?
Yeah, fuck, I always do that. Tottenham and Liverpool playing each other this weekend.
Right. I generally didn't know who it was, sorry, so that's the only reason.
I do that all the time. Fancy having two names for a club, not bad.
Yeah. Greedy.
It's just nonsense. United could find themselves, after being, I think, really ordinary would be the fair way of saying it, because I think shit's not really accurate, but pretty ordinary so far this season. Mm. United could find themselves in a title race. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I mean, as we discussed straight after the game on Saturday, I think the points total will be a lot lower than it has been in previous seasons. And obviously Liverpool, after that, you know, go to Craven Cottage and are lucky, very, very lucky to get a draw out of it.
Scraping a draw.
You know, and Tottenham, Palace, you know, look lively, you know, that, you know, United shouldn't have got beat at home to Palace early in the season. But we've seen consistently that Palace are a decent team. You know, they've got interesting players, so it's not perhaps the biggest scandal that we thought it was at the time. But yeah, so teams are going to drop points. You know, you can see the amount of games, the injuries that are obviously going to stack up. Just the fact that teams have had a drop off. You know, City don't look. You know, I mean, it was odd, wasn't it, that they didn't really go at United on Saturday. And Liverpool have obviously had a drop-off with the injuries that they've got. And you can't really see a period where they're going to get settled and get into a rhythm like they have done, you know, past two seasons. So, yeah, I think United will, as long as they don't, you know, they've got Sheffield United, there we go, I'm at it myself. They've got Sheffield United on Thursday, you know, that surely has to be, you know, a United win, given their form. But, you know.
But what have they done? Lost
everything?
Virtually all but one.
Yeah. So if they obviously that, you know, it's all set up, isn't it, for a, you know, first Chris Wilder win of the season. But if they go and do that one, and you can see games that they've got coming up where they can get a little bit of momentum and just staying in that hunt. Obviously, it depends what happens with the Europa League. Real Sociedad, probably the most difficult draw they could get. If they go out, is that the worst thing in the world? I think United and Solskjaer would like to actually win the tournament and get a bit of silverware, but if it's at the cost of an actual genuine title run, you can't discount the kind of good feeling that even just being close to the top would generate. And I think it's a real prospect that they have to actually seize. You know, they might say, we're not quite ready for it. You know, squad-wise, we'd actually like to have a right winger, you know, as a proper central.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? I mean, winning the league without a right winger is a ballsy call.
Well, there we go.
It's a ballsy attempt.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's obviously areas where the squad need strengthening, but I don't think you can discount this season because it's such a freak season that you can't sort of say, oh, well, actually, we're not ready for it yet.
Imagine we did it.
Yeah, well, I know it's still a long way off, isn't it? And people will probably scoff at the fact that we're even discussing it, but, you know.
Well, this is the closest we've been, I think. Well, and we're not at Christmas yet. There's a few games to go before.
And that's it. Let's look at Christmas and see how it is, or at least halfway through and see.
If we're within 2 points or a point at Christmas on level playing, level amount of games played, I don't think there's been a post-Fergie season where we've been anywhere near that.
Yeah, the Jose second season was what made me think of this was the last time United were ahead of City going into a derby, and it was 2015, so Van Gaal, and that was once, and then it was, you know, Fergie before that. So even when Jose was second to Pep, it was like 15 points difference, I think, by the second time they were playing each other. And it was the gap, whilst it was, you know, neck and neck for a while, the gap quickly opened up and City just ran away with it, didn't they? So, yeah, it would just to actually be in touch at the top, it would be the first time since 2013, you know, if they can do it. You know, perhaps, but yeah, as we say, it's got to be after halfway before we can probably start talking seriously.
Why not? Come on, Laura, get giddy. Let's have a laugh. Fair enough. Let's get ourselves clipped up for the next 7 months.
Isn't it?
Yeah. You're right, laugh. 21's coming, yeah.
Imagine.
Well, stranger things literally have happened.
Well, yeah, I suppose if Leicester 5,000-1, I wonder what the odds on United winning the title were at the start of the season.
Not 5,000-1, I would assume. Yeah, not. But
well, actually, the bookies changed that after that season. I'm sad because I covered Leicester in that season, and I didn't put any money on, even at Christmas when they were 1,000-1, but top of the table, I didn't put any money on. But quite a few people did, and that's why they now don't even offer those long odds, 5,000-1. They kind of all are a bit more, you know, a bit closer to the evens. But actually, if you ask the bookies, they do all these algorithms that, you know, project the likelihood of Leicester winning the league that season, and it was actually 1 in 26,000 times that they ran these, you know, sort of virtual seasons that Leicester actually won the league. So 5,000-1 was actually shortening the odds anyway.
Yeah,
so,
actually pretty shit.
Yeah, wasn't fulfilling what the stats told them, but yeah, even now that I think they've trimmed the odds just because it came in, didn't it? So they have to react.
So but, yeah. If you read between the lines of what Laurie's saying here is, sell all your possessions and make sure you put them on United winning the league at Christmas. That's what he's saying. If you can't quite figure out...
Well, just... Should we have a look at what the odds are?
I'm going to say 18 to 1, 24 to 1, something like that. Not worth putting money on.
Tottenham are the favourites. That's a bit odd, isn't it? You'd still think Liverpool would be the favourite, personally. But they're both very close, about 2 to 1, both of them. Oh, no, sorry, City are the favourites. Sorry, my bad. 2 to 1, both of them. Tottenham 6s, Chelsea 13 to 2, United 18 to 1. There you go, spot on. Leicester 33 to 1. If I scroll down, even Sheffield United are 3,000 to 1 right now.
That's not good, is it?
Yeah. But anyway, we shouldn't. Are we encouraging people to gamble?
Yeah. Right, Loz. Cheers for joining us. What are you working on at the minute over there on that there Athletic?
Well, I went to the under-23s game yesterday at Lee, which had a lot more spice and action than the first team game did. So I'm just doing a little bit of a write-up of that, touching on a few players that I think people are excited about or at least, you know, haven't heard about in a while, like Mesbury and Shawtire and Laird. Brandon Williams played the full 90 minutes. So yeah, doing that.
Laird's assist was a bit of a joke as well. And that's not getting talked about enough. Just walk through.
Yeah, it was lovely. And well, actually, we spoke to Neil Wood afterwards and he said, I mean, second half, you know, and obviously no fans again, you could hear exactly what they were doing. And Laird's a really good communicator, I think. He was very vocal, telling people where he wanted the ball and he was always looking to run behind. But Neil Wood actually thought that maybe a few times he did, when he got the ball, he checked back. So he wants to see more of that that we saw in the first half, which obviously we became accustomed to last season, didn't we, with him, before he got his injury. And he's had a few niggles, I think, this season as well. So he's forever
in the treatment room.
Yeah, you just want him to have a clear run because you can see the potential there, particularly as he's so different to Wan-Bissaka as a right back.
Well, when you see United linked with Trippier and you go, okay, we're looking at someone that's maybe a little bit more adventurous, certainly got ability in the final third, isn't going to be £50 million, and he's different to Wan-Bissaka. Well, hang on. We got two players that fit that bill, and actually one of them's pretty good defensively as well. You've got Dalot out on loan at Milan. I guess Ollie's not having him, but like, there's Trippier. And then you've got Ethan Laird, who could easily be putting pressure on, apart from the fact that his injury record, shocking. If he can stay fit, he has got an almost unlimited ceiling for a fullback. I rate him very, very much.
You've seen more of him than me, but I from what I've seen of him, I think I agree. You know, he's a player that you want to get behind. You can see the intelligence of him as well as the athleticism. I really like him. You just want him.
He's hard as well. He's built like a brick shit house. He's not the tallest, but he's stacked. He's made for Premier League football, I think. He's absolutely made for it. And I think the better opposition that he plays against, the better he's going to look. You know, and he backs himself very highly too. So I would like to see him given the opportunity. I don't know when that's going to come. Maybe the Europa League's the opportunity for him.
He got a bit of a sniff in the last season in that and a bit Carabao Cup, didn't he? Which is what the one that is the one positive about the Europa League. It depends how they want to approach it, but you feel like they could get through against teams more easily with players that, you know, might not regularly feature in the league. But we'll see how they want to do it.
All right, Laurie, cheers for joining us.
Thanks,
make sure to go check out Laurie on Twitter and check out his work on The Athletic. And make sure to check out Manscaped as well. That's 20% off and free shipping. And you can look after your balls this Christmas. Link for that is in the description. Use the code WARMDOWN20 and get 20% off and free shipping. And we'll see you in the next one. Laters.